Hello and welcome to another episode of the Daily Remedy Podcast. Today we're here with Mr. Brandon Pollard, chronic pain activist, advocate, as well as a chronic pain patient himself. And with that, I'd like to welcome Mr. Pollard. Thank you for joining us.
Yeah, thank you, Josh, for having me and doing this. So glad that you are. So let's start with my story. I was raised in a small town here in Ramron, Alabama, and I was a football player. My dad was a great football player, and I was instilled in doing that, being a football player. And I worked out, weights, running, played football, basketball. I just didn't went too much on baseball. So my junior, senior year, I noticed I didn't gain weight on my lifting. So when I was lifting, I noticed my left side wasn't going, because I didn't gain from 175 my max of bench press. I didn't gain none my junior and senior year, and I intensely worked out 3 days a week. Okay, so I go on and I become a meat cutter at a local Piggly Wiggly. Now I've done that for like 15 years. So in 2005 of October, I started having this pain in my left leg. I like, man, it hurts so bad. I can't even hardly walk, stand, sit, or nothing. You know, pinched nerve. So I go to a chiropractor, and we go, and I do 2 or 3 days a week of adjustments for about 2 or 3 months. And I was like, look, I'm not getting any better. And this is costing me, you know, $40 a pop. So I go on, and she's like, well, the only other place now is orthopedic. And I said, well, okay. She started naming off doctors, and she mentioned this one doctor, and I said, well, yeah, let's go with him. He did my mother's back surgery when I was a baby. So I go and visit the doctor, and first right off the rip, MRI. So I go back and get the results, and comes to find out I have a congenital spinal stenosis, and that's the narrowing of your spinal column. Well, I've got the L5, 4, 3, 2, and 1. And he told me, you're too young to be having surgery. And I said, well, I can't live with this pain. And he said, well, you got to go on disability there, man. I don't see how you're working. And I said, well, I've got this truck out there I've got to pay for. Okay, so I go on about my day. And I was like, told me to call my boss and say, hey, you've got to take 2 weeks off, get off your legs for a bit. And so I did. And I went back to work. And it gave me a little bit of a hard time. So I went on and found another job that I could probably do, because I decided to myself, I'm not going to live on disability. And that time I was taking pain medication. He gave me pain medication. This was back in 2005. And a plain muscle relaxer, and that was it. And so I was still doing what I was doing. I got a job working for a mortgage services company, traveling, taking pictures of houses. But my leg, and sitting so long, it still bothered me a little bit, but not as bad. So then it hit again, and in my leg. And so finally, I decided to find something else to do. And I tried to hold jobs up, and I couldn't hold a job because I just hurt too much. So I went on, and I went back to the orthopedic. And I said, look, I've tried everything. I've tried shots, I've tried physical therapy, I've done physical therapy, I've done all that. So they did surgery on me back in 2018. They did an L5-S1 interbody cage with the whole L5-4-3-2, the whole L section lamisotomy, L5-4-3-2-1. And that was done in 2018. So they did another MRI back in 2021, and now I have arachnoiditis. So the results that I have from that is the L5-S1, the lamisotomy, disc bulge, the ossified are present. There is enhancing tissue suggesting epidural fibrosis within the right lateral recess. There's mild narrowing of the right lateral recess. Mild right neurofemoral narrowing is demonstrated due to right foramen disc and osteophyte. There is fluid collection demonstrated posterior to the canal at the L3 level, as well as fluid. So, the findings, there is decreased signal compatible with interbody fusion hardware between the L5 and the S1 vertebrae body, and there are pedicle screws at this level. Decreased T2 signal is demonstrated within the disc L2, 3, 4, and L4/5 and L5S1, compatible with this discitation. Okay. So then it picks up the arachnoiditis. Let's say for it. It picks up the arachnoiditis. All right. Then I just learned to live with the pain and took my pain medication and everything. And over a year, I got better, but my left leg didn't. My lower back doesn't. I still have like a rock feeling back there. It's not fun. It's not fun. So I go in 2019. I was putting up Christmas lights, then I fell on a ladder and fractured both of my humeruses, right and left, bilateral. Well, 3 months of that healing, they did, at least back then, they increased my medicine just a little bit. And I was walking around with stents. So now my leg and my arms and my back. And it goes all the way down to my foot. My toes are even numb. So I recovered from that. Did the therapy, physical therapy, and after that, I got a little better, and I still have problems in my left shoulder. It pops. In September, I got rear-ended of 2022, and the seatbelt caught this shoulder, pulled it back, my head went forward to the rearview mirror, and knocked the rearview mirror off. About a few days later, the pain came. It was so intense for like 2 weeks. I called my doctor, explained everything, and it's like, I'm sorry, there's nothing I could do. Well, I finally went to have the MRI done of my neck. And now they're saying, if I don't do this surgery, that I stand a chance of being paralegic if I don't. Because the C5, C6, the spinal cord is being touched by a bone. And I have congenital spinal stenosis in that also. So I have pain literally from head to toe. And I've been living with this practically going on for 20 years. And I have seen the time when my pain was treated a little more adequately. Because in 2012, I was getting double what I'm getting now as far as prescription. But when the media started reporting that this opiate crisis and started showing this medicine is of mine, I was like, wait a minute. That's not the reason why we don't have an opiate crisis. I said, where's this death y'all are talking about coming from? Because my prescription is not it. I said, all these people are overdosing from heroin or fentanyl. This is, I guess, 5 or 6 years ago, they were showing that on the news media, and they're still getting around. So this morning, I did watching the news this morning, and the CDC came out with new overdose numbers, and you know, they're suppressing the illicit fentanyl rise nationally, 275% nationally increase in a 4-year period, and they're blamed it, a lot of this, increase in overdose on COVID. Sure, it has an isolation of being isolated, you know. So I decided I would call the media company and say, hey, do you mind taking my pain medication off the editing so that you're not confusing the viewers, because you're saying it's illicit fentanyl that causing the opiate overdose crisis problem now, but you got my prescriptions up there. So it's confusing to viewers. What they're seeing, what you're saying, different. And she actually gave me a little bit of pushback. She says, well, people die of opiate overdoses too, prescription. I said, yeah, but they're failing to leave out. Most likely they're either drinking alcohol or taking other drugs with that. And they're not reporting that on their toxicology because they're not required to, I don't think. And the other thing is, I'm sorry, I got lost in thinking. They got it wrong.
No, that's fine. Do you mind?
She gave me, I told her, look, you got it wrong, so just please take it off. The pictures of our medication, they had OxyContin on there and a fentanyl patch, you know, that's prescribed by a doctor. And I said, just please take that off, please. Because you're making me seem that my medicine is the problem, and it's not. The problem is the illicit. Because there's been a 10-year decrease in prescribing rates, but yet there's been a 10-year constantly rising of overdoses, steadily going up.
Yeah.
And I don't understand. So when they told me they got that clip, NBC 13 out of Birmingham, and they said, well, we get the clip, they send it to us. Who sent it to you? CNN. Oh, CNN sends y'all the news to report at our local station here in Birmingham? And she said, yes. Makes me think about the money part. So you're getting paid to feed this narrative by our government or by the opioid litigation money? Because I called the district attorney of Alabama, and I asked them, where is the money and what are you planning to do with it? Well, legislation is sitting on most of that money. The DA itself got $9 million. And what's left, what they spend on, which is substance use disorder, none of it's going to go to opiate therapy. None of it. But it's going to go to where they see fit. Okay, what about the pain, chronic pain patients that were left behind who didn't get their adequate treatment, who got tapered for no reason at all? Okay, what about us? Yeah, okay. I know that our district attorney here in Alabama, I just found out recently, his wife overdosed from the drug. I don't know what drug, if it was illicit or was alcohol a factor in it, but... So they changed laws just so they could sue these pharmaceutical companies in these policies. And now they're scratching their heads trying to figure out everything they can to fix this problem that they also created. So I'm going to let you speak in a little bit now. Ask me some questions. I'm sorry if I've overdone it.
You didn't overdo it at all, and I appreciate your passion, and I'm glad that you're able to finally speak your truth. My first question is, talk about your experiences as a patient when you are first in pain and when you are now going to your physician. What are the conversations like? Do you feel as if there is a lack of trust now than there was before?
Well, that's there's some doctors, I'm sure, but not everyone. I'm very blessed to have the passionate doctor that I have today. I even told him, said, I'll marry you. He has the best pain management I have experienced, frankly, all my life. He's very good. There are a group. They're in a compliance group. So they have different locations, you know. So they have a compliance officer that oversees things too, you know. So I really like it. But what I have seen in the past, and this came from the same place that done my back surgery. I walked out there in tears, Josh. I was squalling. And I was doing the physical therapy. And I was giving it my all. They were taking over my pain management. They finally said they were going to, because I called the administrators at the hospital and said, look, something's got to give. I said, I'm in too much pain. And I know there's better. I know y'all can do better. I know there's better. So they referred me and got me in touch with the doctor. And just so happened, it was at the place that did my back surgery. So I go to them. All right. I have arachnoiditis in my lower back now. Okay. So the second visit was the shots in the back. I probably have had over my lifetime probably 100 steroid shots in my back. Yeah. Too many. Too much. And so I said, once he started inserting the needles, I said, stop, stop. That's hurting me too bad. This is about any sedation, any type, anything. I said, I can't take it. I can't handle it. Because that wall back there is inflamed, and he's poking me with those needles to numb it. I can't stand it. Stop. So I get a phone call 2 days later. We need you to come in. We need to, what's the word they use? To go over your treatment options. Because I couldn't do the shot.
Reevaluate?
Huh? So I go.
Reevaluate?
Yeah, reevaluate. Reevaluated. They reevaluated me, all right. First, I spoke to the PA, the physician's assistant or nurse practitioner. And she's like, it shows here that on your records that you were prescribed Suboxone. I said, yeah, sure was. And yeah, here's this letter too. I took it back to this lady, the medicine and everything. And here's the letter 3 days later to her. I said, this is not working. It's not helping my pain, and I'm not feeling better at all. So she wrote that I go back to pain management. So since they said that I did that they can no longer see me as a patient. Okay. And then, and that's the people that did my back surgery. And I was doing physical therapy. Even trigger point injections, putting the heat to it, and I was a go-getter. Even the orthopedic the other day looked at my neck, he was impressed with my strength. Because I'm not a lazy person, I'm a go-getter, I'm an active person, I stay active, and I'm going to get better, I want to get better. But I can't get better if I don't get the proper amount of pain medication to get better. I know it can be done, I've seen it done. I've read testimonies that women who's actually done this and who's actually had surgery who's done this. It costs a lot of money to do all this. You know, and being a person who's disabled and living on disability, it's really hard to afford that type of stuff. And, you know, our civil rights have been violated anyway, but the Americans with Disabilities Act, you know, but that's been redone April 2022. But so I read up on that a while ago, and they were saying opiate use disorder. I never heard of an opiate use disorder here a few years or recently. So the American Disabilities Act protects individuals who are in parentheses regarded as having an opiate use disorder, even if they do not, in fact, have opiate use disorder. And that's confusing. So what is it really telling? So Title III of the Americans with Disabilities Act and Section 504 of the Rehabilitation Act clearly state that my pain medication should not be infringed or tapered or taken from me, or especially like the DEA is doing, the supply chain of it. You know, there's civil rights that's been violated. And how do we hold these people accountable for the violation? of my rights as a human being.
What have you done so far in terms of talking to your legislators at a local, state, or federal level, and how successful have those conversations been?
Well, I've talked with Tommy Tuberville, I've emailed with him, messaged with him, and Kathy Ansley, she has gotten with Katie Britt, and Katie Britt has replied back to Kathy. And we're trying to get her some information that she needs, because she wrote back and said it's more of a state level than it is a federal level. And I believe we got to change some federal level too, more. But the state level is where we need to be at here in our state of Alabama. But unfortunately, I go to Georgia. I'll choose to go to a Georgia doctor. I will not go to Alabama doctor. I don't know what their problem is, but it's unethical there. So,
before you continue, I don't want to cast aspersions on Alabama or Georgia or pit one state against the other, but do you feel that based on the legislation in one state versus the other, Alabama versus Georgia, you are able to receive better care in one state versus the other? In summary, does the legislation and the stigma affect your quality of care?
Yes. You just interviewed her the other day. You know, me and her both. I asked her to be my advocate and she would go along with me. And we did. She did. Well, I've been on a certain dosage. Okay? So I go and visit this doctor for evaluation. See what you're going to do. What your strategy is in treating me. And some sort of is doing a stem cell therapy. I was wanting to look into that. Because I'm looking at other things too, besides opiates, like peptides and amino acids and ketamine and oxytocin. And so I go and he tapers me. He comes in there and spends less than 5 seconds and he goes chop on the table with the prescription. And that's always, didn't say a word or anything. And she goes chop. So I go and I go down, I get in my car and I look and I'm cut. And I'm understanding, why am I getting tapered for because of the new doctor? And I wrote, called back, and I said, we're sorry, but we don't write that medication only for cancer patients. Oh, really? So I have to have cancer to get the medication I was on? My previous doctor? So luckily, my previous doctor took me back. That's the one I'm with now. And I was with him. Uh-huh. And I asked Dr. Chai, and so he told me, he said, if they ever need me, you know where I'm at. I said, well, thank you, Doc. Because he knows my fight, and he knows what I'm doing. I have a special doctor-patient relationship with my doctor. It's very, very, very important. So I go on, and I go back, and I'm, now I'm having to go through this neck surgery, and I'm worried about it. I don't want to do it because I've had lower back surgery. I went through that, and I don't want to go through another surgery. I just don't. But they're telling me I have no choice. The cervical. The MRI on it. It's pretty bad and towards the middle of the neck. And I guess that explains the popping in my shoulder blade because it pops. Here we are. Found it. Okay, just C4, C5. There is moderate to severe central canal stenosis, moderate to severe bilateral neural foramina stenosis. This is due to unconvertible joint hypertrophy and facet arthropathy. The C5-C6 prominent disc protrusion contacts the cervical cord. There is severe central canal stenosis. There is bilateral moderate to severe neural foraminal stenosis. Hold on. I gotta get up for a second. All my papers floor. I'm sorry about that. My butt gets hurting. If I sit too long, I have to get up, walk around. Alright. So, there is bilateral moderate to severe neural foraminal stenosis. This is due to unconvertible joint hypertrophy and facet arthropathy. The C6-C7 moderate to severe bilateral neural foraminal stenosis. This is due to the same thing as above. Unconvertible joint hypertrophy and facet arthropathy. Tiny disc bulge, moderate central canal stenosis. So, they're wanting to do a discectomy, AC something, to my neck. But he said he can go through my front. But I don't want to do surgery. But he said if I don't, I could be paralyzed. And I'm trying to get in contact with a neurosurgeon. Yeah, that's hard to get in contact with and to find one that'll take my insurance. And I tried yesterday, and as far as noon in Georgia, the neurosurgeon to give me another opinion. Because the way it looks on the disc is it's very narrowed in pretty close. For the rest of the canal like that, it gets really, really closed in. So they might be right. You know, they might be, if I get hit again or fall or something, it could do something to my neck and maybe cause me to be paralytic. And that's what my orthopedic said and my pain management said also. And I love that my orthopedic and my pain management works together. I'm blessed on that part. Yeah. Because I have heard some of the same stories that they don't.
Yeah. Can we talk a little bit about your relationship with your physicians, your pain specialist, your orthopedic surgeon? How did you foster that trusting relationship? Was it something that they took the lead on, or was it something that you helped to create?
I believe it was both. It's both. It's been so long ago, it was the first time I visited, you know. It was just, we developed a relationship. He came in there, he went over everything, he said, "Man, you got a messed up back. You've had surgery?" And I said, "Yeah." Explained to him my surgery, my lower back. Explained to him about the nerve damage that's shooting down my left leg, to into my foot, and to the tip of my toes. It just stays numb. So I explained all that to him. And, you know, so he, of course, writes my medication and wants to do shots. And I tell him, "I've got that arachnoiditis." But he said, "Well, I'm going through a different direction." So he went through a different direction. I never had a doctor, after the shot, the way I felt, did it the way he did, because it's going to sound weird, but it's like the round of my rectum was numb. I don't know if he went in above that to numb it, to get into where he needed to get the shot. So, but that was a weird feeling I never had before. After a shot injection. So the next thing we're going to try is trial stimulator. I said, "Yeah, we'll try it." So I go and I do the stimulator, and after I wake up, I'm told I've got only one wire. He came in there and said I didn't want to risk it on the other side, because I was like, "Risk what?" And I never did get the full answer of why he didn't want to go in on the right side of the wire. He just said he didn't want to risk putting it in. So I only had one lead wire going in for the trial. And so I was walking to the mailbox during that week, and my legs shook and shaked. And I'm like, this is shocking me. So I went back up there a week later to get it pulled out and explained to him it was shocking me and everything. And I said, well, yeah, you cut it off 2 days ago. I said, yeah. And the nurse finally, she spoke up and said, oh, well, I would too. It was shocking me. So now we've got a strong relationship, and I just love him to death. And when my neck came about, I asked him, now, who would you see if that were your neck? For us, at least talk to the orthopedic. He would at least want me to talk to him. So I went to where he sent me to, and they're saying the same thing as he did. But I wanted to get a neurosurgeon to get the third opinion of what I need to do. Because I went through this in my lower back. Do not want to go through this again. No. Not with nurses and the stigma that goes with it, because I take a pain medication. I'm labeled a drug addict. I'm a bad person or something. Whatever.
What sort of legal discussions do you ever have with your doctors? Do they ever express concerns about their legal liability or risk that they may face by continuing to see you as a patient? Have you ever had any sort of conversations like that?
Oh, yeah. I told the doctor, I said, look, I want to protect you, protect me, and I don't want to get you in trouble. And, you know, we know our limit. We know where we can go, and that's it. And of course, you know, that's 90 MME. And I understand that, and that's what I have to live with. So that's the reason I'm looking into other things like ketamine and oxytocin. He's okay for me to do a ketamine infusion, but I don't have $450 to go do a ketamine infusion, much less take someone, drive me there, pay them to where they can actually take it to a compound pharmacy and make it there. So I'm going to try to talk to him about that tomorrow. I have an appointment with him tomorrow. It's my due date and everything. So I'm going to have the conversation about that. And if not that, we're going to talk at least a little bit about the peptides and amino acids, KBV-853, some sort of that. I've got to get a compound pharmacy and him to look at it. I've got the paperwork showing tomorrow. But I don't want him to get in trouble. He understands that. He knows what is going to have to happen. He understands that legislation needs to be changed and policy needs to be changed to reverse the damage. He understands.
Understood.
That. Yes.
With the remaining time that we have, can you share a little bit about the discussions you and your providers have had around policy change? What would you suggest a policy change, and what have they suggested as policy changes?
What I would suggest, right, well, just like in some other states in Arizona, I would suggest the individualized care, but the legislation needs to change before we can protect the doctor, okay? Before a DEA agent could go into a doctor's office, they must go into that county court system to get a warrant to go into that doctor's office. And it has to be some sort of a criminal activity, criminal charge, okay? Other than that, it needs to go to the medical board. But there needs to be a law established in that. And another thing, I'm glad you said that, another thing that needs to change, and only Kentucky has this legislation in place. I had to go 2 days without my pain medication, all while taking care of an elder patient, simply because the computer system was down. Okay? Only in Kentucky are you allowed to write hand prescription my medicine that I get, handwrite, only in Kentucky. Can't do it in Georgia, can't do it in Alabama. least in this area. It has to be electronically. And at that time, the system was down because he approached me. He asked me what time my drugstore closed. I said, it's 6. I said, it may not get there today, might be tomorrow. Well, it didn't get there till 2 days later. It finally came. And that's something that needs to be put in all states. It should be dependent upon computers to print someone's prescription. And if it's down, there should be protocol in place like Kentucky has that the doctor can write a handwritten script, at least for a time period to get the database up and going, back up and going. And we have to protect the doctors. We've got to, because 2025, 75% of most of all doctors are going to retire, are going to be gone.
Yeah.
And they're going to be replaced with new ones. And that's 75%. That's 1 out of every 5 doctors gone. And why are they leaving? I'm sure they're burned out of all this paperwork, government oversight, worried about being locked up. Dr. Randy, they just transferred into federal prison. I wrote a letter to the judge on his behalf. It's the good faith clause, you know, to ruin you versus the United States. And he's serving 15 years because he cares for a patient. If he was my doctor, I didn't even know he was a doctor until the day came that he's got to go to that court. And I'm like, what? You believe me? I did not know he was a doctor. And just the other day, I was speaking with another person I network with. Just to come to find out, he's a doctor too. He served his time. And if I'm not mistaken, haven't you also been attacked by the Drug Enforcement Agency? Yeah, and this is so crazy to me. They're going to send the National Guard down there to the southern border to influence of the Title 42, where they should already been down there stopping the illicit fentanyl. National Guard, why aren't they there to do that? I just lost my aunt, lost her grandson. I never thought the boy would ever go just doing street drugs, but he did. He lost his brother at 18 to bone marrow cancer. And his dad had open heart surgery, and my aunt Ann is in close to 90, taking care of her grandson, staying in her house. Calvin had to break the door down, him laying there with a needle in his arm dead. And they want to change laws to prosecute drug dealers. Lord, it's coming in down there. And you want to send the National Guard? Y'all don't have them there yet. Why aren't the CDC down there? This is poisoning our country and poisoning young kids, young Americans. We could easily go to the doctor and get safe medications. Or anyone could. But why are we not doing that? Instead of you want to change policy. And just like Dr. Linda Cheek said, you know, regulate all of it. Because addiction, be addicted to Coca-Cola, be addicted to cigarette, you be addicted to pornography. It's all sorts of addictions. But my pain medication is not the problem of this opiate epidemic.
Yeah.
It's sad.
With that, Mr. Potter, thank you so much for your time.
And they need to go to the courthouse and through that judge, and it has to be some sort of criminal activity before they can even step foot in that doctor's office. And how would an DEA agent know any medical term or terminology? Yeah, they've got a special doctor that they pay for and they hire. But look at my records. Yeah, you tell me you take my pain medication away, I'll slap you upside the face. Yeah, well, just being honest, you're taking away my quality of life when you're messing with my life.
Yeah.
You're messing with something pretty precious.
Yeah.
Because, and I don't believe suicide is the answer either. We shouldn't be there. It's like my friend told me today. She's squalling. It's like, why don't you shut me off? Why don't you come around? I said, Sheila, I love you, hon. Sometimes I shut down. And I'm sorry that I shut down. It's just, I just don't want to be around no one, okay? And she was squalling. And I took her some information over there today, and I said, look, here's some information. I'm going to just show you this. And I said, you see this lady right there, Jessica? I said, she took her life, medical-assisted suicide, because she's tired of living in pain. Why are we there? Why is that? That's not okay. Should not be an option. And this is like what she said. Why couldn't they just take care of her pain?
Yeah.
But they don't want to take care of her, take her
these
out
are very
of the
difficult
world.
Questions.
Life?
Yeah. Yeah.
Sorry, Josh, I'm overwhelmed you.
No, I fully understand, and I wish we had more time to continue, but unfortunately we have to wrap up. But I want to thank you so much for your time, and thank you for the conversation. It was really appreciated.
Thank you, Dr. J. Joshi, for everything you do. Goodbye.